The aftermath of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. The aftermath of nonviolence is redemption. The aftermath of nonviolence is reconciliation. The aftermath of violence, however, is bitterness. And this is the thing I'm concerned about. Let us fight passionately and unrelentingly for the goal of justice and freedom. But let's be sure that our hands are clean in the struggle. Let us never fight with falsehood and violence and hate and malice, but always fight with love, so that when the day comes that the walls of segregation have completely crumbled in Montgomery, that we will be able to live with people as our brothers and sisters.
This is the Beloved Community, a once per month radio extravaganza. I'm John Shuck. My website is johnshuck.com or progressivespirit.net. Find me on Facebook and Twitter. Post a lot of radical stuff there. What you're going to hear in a few minutes is a recording of a live show that Paul Roland and I did on KBOO. I engineered nearly every Thursday morning for about 4 years on KBOO. And on Thursday morning, November 21st, 2019, due to a communication breakdown, the host didn't show up. And Paul, who has a live show every Wednesday and does a folk music show on Thursday mornings, happened to be in the radio station, and he suggested that he go on live, and he asked me to join him. So I engineered, and he went on in the studio. And we did, and we took phone calls, and we just opened up a topic. Actually, it was about worldwide protests that were going on, and took phone calls and decided to see what would happen. I think it was the most fun that I had there at that radio station. I don't miss the censorship at KBOO, but I do miss live radio and wish I had the opportunity to do it more. I think you'll enjoy this. It's 8:02, and we may have a confusion of who's on today, so we're going to do something interesting. We got Paul Roland in the studio. Joanna's yet to come in. Hey, Paul.
Hey, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
I think I was just on yesterday.
How was it?
I thought we did a good show. But I'm not Joanne Hardesty, and I'm not any of the other people who appear semi-regularly in this spot. But I did do my folk music show this morning, and I just finished my playlist. So I'm free to step in the breach. If anyone out there forgot that you're supposed to be in the slot today and would like to come in and do it, or maybe they're coming into the studio. In any case, it's all good, and we have an hour to take your calls and talk about whatever the heck you want to talk about. What do you want to talk about, John?
Well, I'd like to talk about a lot of things. We could talk about protests around the world. I haven't done a lot of research on them, except to realize, I wonder, some say that these protests that are going on around the world are actually somewhat engineered by interests, U.S. interests, in fact, to stir up trouble. So there you go. There's a controversial topic.
That is a controversial topic. I'm not sure I would buy into that. I think that my feeling about that is that if you look at, say, look back to the the Sandinista revolution struggle, and then you look at the Contras that fought against, it was a reactionary I would consider anti-revolutionary, but and the CIA, US and the CIA certainly were there, definitely funding the Contras and encouraging them to beat back the Sandinista revolution. That is all undisputable. At the same time, the Sandinistas were messing with those indigenous communities, and there's a lot of grievances against the Sandinistas. So, what came first? Was it the grievances and the, pushing back against some of the moves against their autonomy by the indigenous people? Or was it started by the U.S.? I think that's a difficult thing to say. I think this is probably something similar, if indeed it can be proved that the U.S. is, favoring some sides, whether it's in Iran or Hong Kong or whatever. To say that it's just the U.S. instigating them, I think, disrespects the legitimate grievances of the people against their supposedly duly constituted authorities.
I just got a Facebook post here from Ayatollah Khamenei. I just posted it on my Facebook page. This is his opinion. He says he wrote this November 15th. 2015, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The U.S. presence has brought about nothing but malevolence and corruption. He's talking about U.S. presence in the Middle East. As soon as they set foot in this region, they brought malice and corruption with them. In whichever area they set foot, they bring about insecurity, they wage domestic wars, or they do things like creating Daesh. We want the true face of the U.S. to be seen. We want Muslim nations to know what the true colors of the United States are, and what stands behind their support for democracy, human rights, and other such false and hypocritical statements. The people should understand this. That's a pretty strong statement right there.
Again, though, I would say, so are you, in saying that, are you saying that you support the government of Iran and everything that they do?
I'm just quoting what the Ayatollah said. And I think that's up for discussion. I think that's an important item for discussion.
That's why I was
discussing
it.
As we think about protests around not only in Iran, also in Iraq, questions that are going on in Syria, a lot of these things.
How about Chile?
Yeah, I don't know too much about Chile. Tell me about that one.
Well, you know, it seems like it started ostensibly, from what you hear, as a revolt against a raising of the mass transit fares, you know, but of course, you know, that's probably the straw that broke the camel's back. It's being framed by people that I respect as a revolt against neoliberal economics and the, you know, basically the austerity. And a lot of the revolts around the world, I think, could be framed in that way.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, the coup in Bolivia is also up for suspicion as well.
It's certainly, you know, what Evo Morales did compared to what was the general run-of-the-mill repressive administrations, neo-colonial in Bolivia and many other countries in Latin America, was certainly to be applauded. He certainly, you know, changed the distribution of wealth. He helped indigenous people get some of their pride back, some of their sense of agency. And again, I haven't studied all these things. I'm sort of, you know, talking off you know, my instincts and the little that I've read. On the other hand, if you know, I've heard on Democracy Now! And on KBOO, on Old Mole on Monday, some legitimate critiques of sort of the male, strong male leader model of governance, and, you know, Evo Morales's mistakes that he made and not opening up, not sharing power, not cultivating new leadership, sort of taking too much, sort of the founder syndrome that seems to be really prevalent in many institutions. So, yeah, these are complex things. I guess I just rebel against reducing them to one dimension. But anyway, we're interested in what you have to say about this or other subjects that you want to talk about. 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
Yes, 503-231-8187, I'll deal with the engineer and get the phone calls here, and Paul you can talk to them, and we'll see. Unless we got the real host of the show is going to come in, but if not, it's you and me. But one of the things that I get suspicious about, Paul, is whenever the United States has a role in international affairs, I distrust the idea that it's humanitarian. And I find myself more and more distrusting the narrative that they're actually helping and fixing, as more or less actually, on the other hand, I get suspicious. That's really all I want to say.
Well, I totally, but I absolutely agree with that. I am suspicious of just about any, I think any supposed effort to help globally by the United States, almost without exception, has strings attached to it and has a either overt or covert hidden agenda. I think that goes without saying. But I also say that you can't you know, look at say Russia. I mean, how can one support Putin? How can one support this patriarchal, masculinist, aggressive regime that you know doesn't respect women, doesn't respect people with other sexual orientations. There's just some basic repressive aspects to it that just because they're sort of the enemy of your enemy doesn't make them necessarily your friend. Oh, I guess John's on the phone. I was waiting for him to respond back, but maybe he'll have heard out of one of his ears what I said. But hopefully we're going to have some calls coming in. And this is a spontaneous, this is a community radio at its, I don't know, at its most spontaneous, let us put it that way. But it's an open hour. It's an open hour. So that's usually, you know, us talk show hosts have our guests lined up, our themes lined up, and we tend to, you know, take the conversation in the direction that we've already sort of thought out, which is good. But it's also good to occasionally leave open time for people like you or you or you to call up at 503-231-8187. Looks like we might have a caller.
Yes, we do. We've got Harry. Harry, are you there?
All right,
yes,
Harry.
I am. Greetings, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. I think one of the reasons for some of these protests and things and problems that are going around the world is the removal of term limits. In Bolivia, that's what Morales did. He was supposed to have only 1 5-year term, I think it was, and he changed the constitution, so no term limits. China did the same thing. They used to have a 5 or 6-year term, and the new president right now, he changed it and got rid of term limits. So it's causing some issues with, you know, authoritarians or movement is taking over these governments, and one way they do it is getting rid of term limits. No, and your thoughts on that?
I certainly think that factors into it. The complications it gets and why I certainly feel not fully up to the task that I've set myself for stepping in to the talk show host on Thursday, usually filled by other people very knowledgeable about things, is okay. So yeah, that's true. On the one hand, I mean, it'd be interesting to hear from within what Evo Morales is, how he would defend it. Because once there's a really great letter, which I had copied off yesterday. Unfortunately, I don't have it with me. Written by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz and three other people. It's a letter to intellectuals. Maybe you could pull that up, John, if you have some time. A letter to intellectuals regarding the something about revolution. Anyway, the thrust of the letter is basically that revolutions are a difficult and painful process, and you can't expect them to win in a short period of time. So when you embark on something, you know, when you try to embark on a revolutionary process through the electoral process, it is difficult because, yes, you might be voted out, and then someone might be voted in who completely reverses that. So there is a tendency, whether it's good, bad, or whatever, I don't know, but there is an understandable tendency by someone like Morales, who's embarked on a really attempt to profoundly change the society. And yeah, not wanting to just let all the gains that are you know, I'm sort of defending him here. So yeah, I think it's a difficult thing. And so I see two sides of at least the Morales question. Now, you know, China, what a morass this is. I could never defend the Chinese government. That society is so thoroughly controlled, and unfortunately is so thoroughly bought in to, you know, if not the capitalist, you know, generally governance style, certainly the capitalist massive production orientation, which is just contributing to the devastation of our climate and world ecosystem. So I'll never defend China. I think they went way wrong you know, I think even Mao himself went wrong, you know, by the 1960s for sure. But you know, these are extremely complicated discussions. John, what do you have to say about it?
Hello, Harry. How are you?
Yeah, I'm here. Oh, sorry. Yes.
You know, I never defend China. I guess I would, or Russia or whatever. Would you say the same about the United States?
I'd never defend the United States.
Oh no,
there we go.
No, definitely not. We the issues that we did. You were talking about the Sandinistas and things that happened. You know, during in Nicaragua. I mean, the CIA had made out a pamphlet for these rebels, and it told them the first people you go after. You go after teachers, and you go after healthcare workers. What you know? This is our CIA saying that, you know, telling who to kill. I mean, this is, you know, killing these people, you know. And wow, what our government has done is something else. But the next topic I like to bring up is a news blackout. There are two civil wars that are going on that is hardly ever reported. Or reported as a civil war, the one that's in Libya right now, and that we caused. You know,
right.
Obama overthrew Gaddafi, and it's something in history we have to come to grips with. No one wants to talk about it. He overthrew Gaddafi,
and Hillary Clinton laughed about it, cackled about it, saying, "We came, we saw, he died."
Yeah, and we thought Gaddafi was in one place, and we fired a missile from one of our ships, and Gaddafi wasn't there, but his son and his grandson was, and they were killed. Isn't that murder?
You know,
and no war was declared or anything else like that. So what's going on there? The next one, people don't realize that's a rebellion and or a civil war. What's going on in Ukraine? Now, people have to remember that the Russians have Ukraine has never been a country ever until they break up with the Soviet Union, and there was always Russians for over 200-300 years. There was always ethnic Russians who lived in Ukraine, and the Russians usually lived in the cities, and the Ukrainians lived in the Ukrainians and Jews lived in the rural areas. And so when it broke up, in 2014 when they overthrew the president and he had to run for his life, it was because there was a program going on ethnic Russians. They removed them from the military. They removed them from government. And so when they say, oh, the Russians are fighting the Ukrainians, no, they're not. They're rebel Ukrainian Russians that are doing this. And because if Russia wanted to march into Ukraine, it'd be over in just a second, you know.
Yeah.
So, and another one who got rid of term limits was Putin.
Hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Harry, thank you so much. Did you watch the debates? Do you follow the Democratic debates?
Oh yeah. Yes, I watched a part of them. And what came up about 3 years ago? I mean, 3 months, 3 weeks ago. Was something that might really hurt Biden. Was 3 weeks ago he was campaigning in South Carolina. So he goes to a church. He's a Catholic, and they refuse him communion because of his stance on abortion.
Huh.
Yeah, and Cuomo, they told Cuomo the same way. If you go to communion, we're going to refuse you. So when Cuomo goes to church, he doesn't go to communion because according to the Catholic doctrine, you're supposed to take communion at least once a year. So Cuomo was smart on that. Biden wasn't. So we thought that would hurt his chances. And then because Bloomberg smelt blood, so he decided, I'm going to run for a Democratic president.
Yeah. Harry, it's been fun. Thanks for calling up. I got another call here. We got Norm on the line. Norm, are you there? Whoop. There's Norm. Are you there, Norm? Oh, he's not there. I guess I lost Norm. Let me try this one. All right. Hello. Are you there, Norm?
I am here.
All right. You're on. Yeah, this is a wild show. We got Paul, Roland, and myself. Checking it out here because our host didn't quite make it yet this morning. So what's up?
You know, I like to make a call out to the female listeners. I want to hear more women call. I don't mind guys calling up, but I'd like to hear more women.
Well,
thank you much. Bye-bye.
Okay, there you go. We'll do that. All right, Paul Rowland. It is 8:20. The phone number is 503-231-8187. If you'd like to call and talk about anything you'd like to talk about here on KBOO.
Indeed. Let's get people who've never called in before. This is your chance. We're just going to take a breath, you know, and have our regular callers take a back seat here. And certainly we're open to women to call for sure, because, you know, men often tend to be the more aggressive, I think, still at this this stage in our society. We haven't developed as much as we'd like. And we like to, for people who regularly call, with people, you know, tend to maybe have more privilege or more voice in the society, to step back. But we're definitely not wanting to discourage anybody, because we've got 40 minutes to fill, and we are stepping in to a spot who we're not sure who is supposed to be here, but we're glad to do it. Me and my Paul Rowland and John Shook is the board op. Been doing this for many years, John, and now he's stepping front and center on talk radio. And looks like we have a caller.
Yeah, let's see if we can get Ed on here, if I got the buttons right. Ed, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Hey, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for this format that you guys so graciously continue from year to year to have. I was just listening on the radio as I'm heading to work. You know, you're talking about Iran, you know, a little history of the covert operations from the U.S., and this is why I don't trust the U.S., is that was 1953, Iran had elected their first democracy with good elections, and the U.S. and Britain didn't like that because it would jeopardize the oil trade. And they did the U.S., one of the first court operations they had to overthrow a government was in Iran.
Yep.
And and it was headed up by the CIA, which was headed up by Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt's grandson. And it was so successful, you know, in cost that you know, they decided to implement it around the world. So that was. Our relationship with Iran was the first case where they actually overthrew a democracy.
You know, what a great book about that is Dan Kovalik. He's written a number of books, The Plot to Overthrow. You've heard of his book, yeah.
Yes, I have. And so I don't really trust U.S. policy on anything that they do, unless they want to rake the country of their natural resources and leave nothing for the peoples that live there.
Yeah.
So, you know, until we clean up our own act, you know, we're not going to get very far. And it looks like our own citizens are suffering from this, this massive distribution of wealth and whatnot.
And, yeah.
And practicing this propaganda to our own citizens, you know, to where it used to be kind of, you know, after World War II, it was kind of hands off, you know, everything's going all right. But no, they decided that U.S. citizens shouldn't have that right either. So here we are today. So anyway, thank you very much for a great show, and thanks for letting me sound off a little bit.
You're great, Ed. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Thank you. Good.
All right, we're going to get Jack on. Jack, you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, great. We got Paul Rowland here with us. This is Voices from the Edge. The substitutes have taken over. All right, how you doing?
Oh, just waking up, but it's interesting that you're letting everyone call in and, you know, say what they have to say.
I think that needs to happen, and that's what community radio is all about. So what do you got to say, Jack? This is your chance. You are speaking.
Well, I apologize to the
world.
The guy just before two calls ago. I'm not a woman, but that's okay. I mean, I'm not taking a space that a woman is trying to get to, so they can come on anytime they want, I guess.
Sure.
But anyway, yeah, you're right. Your premise about the U.S. Fomenting revolutions is, I think, something that needs to be talked about. I think we had it stated very, very clearly when George Bush declared mission accomplished. And the mission, that's what's not clear, the mission. The mission was, at that point in time, the global war of terror had been fully launched. It was really on a roll. And chaos, destabilization, failing of nation failing was burgeoning across the Middle East, and that's the mission.
Right.
The mission is to fail states. The mission is to put societies in turmoil and disarray. And for what cause, for what reason? I think that it's pretty clear that a failed state cannot protect its citizenry from the ravages of the IMF, the World Bank, essentially the global finance oligarchs can just basically have their way with any population, with their resources, with their territory, whatever. And that's the goal, and the mission is chaos.
Do you think this global war on terror is, would you say, some have said this is just, it's really a fraud. What would you say to that?
Well, the terror is real, that's for sure.
But who's committing it, right?
I would drop back to, and a lot of people don't like Webster Griffin Tarpley and his analyses, but he made it pretty clear, I believe, after 9/11. He said, "You got to watch. You see, if you got a big terrorist event, what you got to look for is the people who are supposedly watching the terrorists, because what it turns out is that they're actually handling the terrorists." And if you do enough research on 9/11, you'll find that that's the case with the so-called 9/11 19 hijackers, which AKA patsies were actually. There's good research on this actually, where these guys were before the event happened and what they were doing, and how they were being handled. So. And then if you look post 9/11 at the terrorist incidents, the things that were so supposedly thwarted by the FBI, in most cases the FBI was actually running those guys and had set them up. They were stings or whatever they were, but
I'm glad you brought up 9/11. It's not a topic that people like to bring up very much, but it's an important one. 9/11 Unmasked, the 9/11 Consensus Panel gets into that and a lot of issues. Have you read that book or heard about the 9/11 Consensus Panel, David Griffin?
Yeah, I followed it since a few years right after it, and what I've concluded is that it is important. It's the linchpin to the global war of terror, and It was what triggered the whole thing, and they could use it any time they wanted. You had Giuliani running around. Every other word that came out of his mouth was 9/11, and he's trying to get run for president. And now we see where Giuliani is. And it's important. And there are recently the most recent development. I don't know if you followed this or not. Is that the firefighters. The firefighters are calling adamantly for a new transparent investigation.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. Yes. I've heard of a new investigation, firefighting in New York, New York State.
That's right.
Right, calling for a new investigation. I've done quite a bit. Gioia is the name of the firefighter, G-O-I-A, I think is his name that started that up. Yeah. Hey, Jack, thank you so much.
Great.
Appreciate you calling. You have a great day. This
Thanks.
Is KBOO, KBOO. The phone number is 503-231-8187 if you'd like to call and join the free-for-all here with Paul Roland and myself. We have also on the phone Joe. I think, if I got the button right. Are you there, Joe?
Yeah, I am.
Hey, good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks. Good job holding down the contingency situation. I wanted to put a plug in the vein of some of topic brought up earlier about the protests, really the revolt in Chile, and how it's triggered by a youth-led movement resisting, revolting against the fare increases. We see, I think, similar sorts of challenges to fare systems and mass transit systems around the world, around the United States, in New York. And next week, there is going to be a youth-led rally at Pioneer Square that's calling for justice in how TriMet enforces its fares, and really pushing the question of eliminating fares altogether, because as some people may know, but a lot don't, TriMet is mostly funded through taxes already. Fares make up less than 20% of the actual operating costs. And so finding a way to eliminate those fares, like getting rid of the fare enforcement department that costs millions of dollars, would be a way of creating a fareless system. That rally is going to be at Pioneer Square on Friday the 29th from 12 to 3. And it's being put on by a group called the Pacific Northwest Youth Liberation Front. We're going to try and get them on the Old Mole next week to talk a bit more in depth about their organizing around the issue and connecting it to those more global issues. But I wanted to put that on people's radars, too.
Well, I'm really glad you did, Joe. You know, is this rally that's coming up the 29th, so this is this about reducing fares altogether or eliminating the fares?
It seems to be the intersection of that, of eliminating fares, and calling into question the heavy-handed way that TriMet has used fare evasion to over-militarize fare enforcement department.
Great. Yeah, I think the idea of making the fares free is the way to go, isn't it? I'm with you on that.
Yeah, everybody's all concerned about global warming. If we actually, of course, we rightly should be, if we could actually thoroughly discourage the use of private automobiles and open up the transit to everybody much more easily, I think it would be interesting where that would go. It would be an interesting experiment.
Yeah, I think Portland should be a leader in that. Yeah. Joe, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Hey, Paul, we have a woman online here.
Well, let's not put her on the spot too much, but
Diane. Yeah, you have to represent all women, Diane.
Okay. Well, actually, I was going to talk about another topic, if that's okay.
That's okay.
All right. I'm a medical professional, and I have been really following Medicare for All. And I've been following all these. We just had a debate yesterday and all the presidential candidates that are running for president. And in the beginning, as you remember, they all said, oh, yes, we all agree we need to have Medicare for All. But slowly, every one of them seems to have changed their mind. And the last one was Warren, who then said that she was going to, slowly build up to it, and do a public option, which we know is not going to be financially feasible, and it will just not happen. It's just another way of not doing it. So when I heard that, as someone who's passionate about Medicare for All, I said, oh, wow, this is really makes everything clear on the election. It's Bernie Sanders that's going to be the only one really for Medicare for All on day one. And so I get a lot of letters, and there's this organization called Our Revolution. I don't know if you know about it, but it's something that's affiliated with the Bernie Sanders campaign. And they have they're going to bring up Parmeet Jamapal, who's going to be talking. And I said, well, that's really interesting that they're having this woman talk at this kind of like Bernie site. And it's because she is defending Warren and saying, oh, no, it's fine what Warren is saying. So I'm just thinking to myself, do these people know what they're doing? We finally get it clear about who's on what side, and now it's going to be confused again. And I just find this absolutely fascinating, and I wanted to share it with my brilliant people here at the KPU, because maybe there's something we can do with it. We can tell the revolution people who are giving her a platform on November 24th, what are you doing?
Yeah. Medicare for All is simply a no-brainer, isn't it? I mean, even when it started up with Obama, and right away, when it was first going to start happening, he nixed it right away. And then they got Max Baucus from Montana there, who nixed the whole thing. So it wasn't even on the table of discussion. And, you know, that's been said, if we had Medicare for All and we had free education for college, it would make it very difficult for the U.S. war machine to recruit. Because that's oftentimes the recruiting thing. Oh, we'll pay your education back, or we'll pay, now it's even pay your education loans back if you go out and sacrifice your body for the empire's wars. But really, healthcare, I think it's an issue. I wonder if it's an issue really of just the war machine is in support of not having Medicare for All, as well as adult education or higher education that's free, and reducing that Pentagon budget would be a way to go.
Well, this is a little bit of an inside ball game that I expressed to you, and it just shows you how it's you know, big money does not want it to happen. Could you imagine if we had healthcare that we needed? It would cause a revolution in this wonderful country. So this is something that it just shows you how complicated it is, and how when you think somebody's on your side, they may not be. Because, you know, money trumps a lot, and it's very confusing. I just want people to really open your eyes and see who really is for Medicare for All.
Very good. Diane, thank you so much. Appreciate your phone call. Have a great day. All right. This is KBOO. It's Voices from the Edge, Paul Rowland, and myself, John Chuck, here. Yeah, Paul.
I pulled up this article that I was talking about. It was a letter to intellectuals who deride revolutions in the name of purity is the name of it. I'm sure you can find it. It is written by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, Anna Maldonado, Pilar Trova Fernandez, who I believe one of those two women is actually in Bolivia, part of the movements in Bolivia, and Vijay Prashad, who I think has been on KBOO a certain amount, has been on Democracy Now. Anyway, probably those others as well. So it's I would read this, but it looks like I thought we had another caller. They seem to have disappeared. But 503-231-8187 is the number. We don't want to hog the airwaves. We do want to listen to you. So this is an open hour that just sort of miraculously opened up here on a Thursday morning. And until somebody calls, let me just read a couple paragraphs, because I think this.
But let me give you that number again, 503-231-8187. Yeah, it's a free-for-all. Call up.
So let me just read a couple paragraphs, because I think this is really stimulating. I think this should stimulate discussion. Revolutions do not happen suddenly, nor do they immediately transform a society. A revolution is a process which moves at different speeds, whose tempo can change rapidly if the motor of history is accelerated by intensified class conflict. But most of the time, the building of the revolutionary momentum is glacial, and the attempt to transform a state and society can be even more slow. Leon Trotsky, sitting in his Turkish exile in 1930, wrote the most remarkable study of the Russian Revolution. 13 years had elapsed since the Tsarist Empire had been overthrown, but the revolution was already being derided, even by people on the left. Capitalism, Trotsky wrote in the conclusion to that book, required 100 years to elevate science and technique to the heights and plunge humanity into the hell of war and crisis. To socialism, its enemies allow only 15 years to create and furnish a terrestrial paradise. We took no such obligation upon ourselves. We never set these dates. The process of vast transformation must be measured by an adequate scale. And then they go on to talk about Hugo Chavez in Venezuela and Evo Morales in Bolivia, and how their critics on the left in North America and Europe gave their governments no time to breathe. And I'll hold it off right there, because it looks like we got a couple callers.
We do have a couple of callers, Paul. We have Boris. Boris, how are you?
Good morning.
So what's up?
I want to talk about propaganda.
Okay.
Specifically, propaganda in the good old United States of America.
Well, that's where it's the best.
Started on its run back with a cat named Edward Bernays, World War I propaganda. Turned out to be pretty successful, so they decided to enhance it and make it pretty much universal across media in this country. And I want to give you a specific example of what I'm talking about. I heard a debate, a quote-unquote debate, between a guy named Michael Chertoff. Do you remember him?
Uh-huh.
I don't know what he was, Secretary of War or something like that under Bush. Between Michael Chertoff and a college professor, which the guy doesn't have any, recall him from anything, so I don't know anything about the college professor, but it took place on a college campus back east last year, and the premise of the quote-unquote debate was to decide whether or not the United States interventions around the world were actually for humanitarian purposes or if they weren't. And, of course, Michael Chertoff was a proponent of the idea that they're always for humanitarian purposes. And he made a statement that floored me. He said, obviously, there's proof that they are for humanitarian purposes. Look what happened in Kuwait with the evil Iraqis going into hospitals and taking babies out of incubators and throwing them on the floor. Do you remember that?
I do remember the 15-year-old girl
story
was the
that was promoted across all of American media.
Yeah, that was a fake story.
This statement went totally unchallenged. Not only did the college professor that he was debating not challenge it, but none of the students in the audience during the question and answer period challenged that statement. What a perfect example of the effectiveness of propaganda in this country.
Boris, great, great example. Exactly. That's the kind of thing. As long as it's an illusion, I think. There's an illusion of America as divinely exceptional, that our leaders may do bad things, but ultimately they're on the side of good and God and apple pie and all of that kind of stuff. And that is the propaganda, I think, Boris, that you just mentioned, that keeps coming at us again and again and again, and it keeps people, Americans, it's for Americans, keeping us from actually analyzing critically that leadership and money and whatever it all is the same everywhere, no matter if you have the flag of the red, white, and blue or whatever it might be. And I think the propaganda that we have is something that's very important. We should look at it. And that's why it's the importance of having community radio, an alternative kind of media that is not connected to the whole military, industrial, finance, media, intelligence complex, that we can speak about these kinds of things. It is 8:43. Paul Rowland is in the studio. I know that Teresa Mitchell came in, and so she'll have her show of Press Watch coming up at 9 o'clock. And then Fight the Empire. There's Pear. Pear's here.
I got a word to say.
Pear's got a word to say. How are we going to get you on here? I got to figure this button out.
This microphone on?
Which one is it? Is it two? Is it this one?
This one on?
I don't know. Turn them all on. See if you're up there.
Okay, well, I would just say that we really are exceptional. No other nation in the history of the world started out with such a big free lunch. You think of all the great resources, the land we stole from the Indians, and the free labor of slaves. That was our free lunch, and that got us a big boost. And we're kind of living off of that still.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my 2 cents.
All right. Pear, thank you for your 2 cents. He's got more sense than that coming up at 9:30. Paul is here. If you'd like to give us a call, 503-231-8187. It's a free-for-all this morning with Joanne not being able to make it in today. So Paul Rowland and I have just kind of taken over, and we're going to get Harvey on the phone. Harvey,
Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hello?
Hey, yeah. Great. Glad to have you here.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to give you three reasons why single payer is so important. Number one, people are afraid that their insurance policies go in if they get sick. So a lot of times they postpone care and they get sicker, and that leads to dire consequences. The second is that people who don't have insurance are afraid, or ones who are afraid to go in because their insurance policies will go up. Often that could lead to the possibility of epidemics and pandemics, because if people don't come in for treatment, it could spread, whatever it is, could spread to the general public, But if a single payer system were in place, they would just go in, and it would really help to stem any possible pandemics or epidemics. Number two is that the homelessness, the cost of insurance is actually created a lot of homelessness. People can't pay their tremendous bills when they get them, and they have they're on a very fixed income, and they can't afford anything anymore, and they end up homeless. So it's one of the major roots for homelessness. And number three is that people who are stuck in jobs that they hate because they have an insurance policy, they fear leaving it, and so we miss out a lot on people having a lower stress lifestyle, pursuing their dreams as an entrepreneurial in an entrepreneurial way, because they have to stay in the job because they're afraid to lose their health insurance. So those are three. It creates a lot of stress in our society. People get sick from stress. The way we run our health game is we'll make people sick and poor and homelessness, and could again create pandemics and epidemics.
You know, Harvey, I think that I don't know if this is true. I don't know what polls actually say, but I have a feeling that a lot of people are for Medicare for all. And why can't this get done?
Well, it just takes, you know, we give over 50% of our gross national product to the industrial, to the armed services and industrial,
military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm. You know, if we take even a portion of that money and give it back to the people, it's, after all, it is our money. And if we return it to the people, the America will be stronger. You know, we're sort of told that the military-industrial complex keeps us stronger. But it's really, if we have less of a military-industrial complex and more health care, we will be a stronger nation.
Harvey, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate you giving us the word this morning.
Thank you. All right.
This is KBOO. I'm John Schock. I'm with Paul Rowland. And I'm trying to figure out how to get this. There it is. Okay. I don't have anybody on the phone. 231-8187, 503-231-87 is the phone number to call if you'd like to be on this free-for-all with Paul and I. What do you think so far, Paul?
I always go back to this question of, you know, the difficulty of incrementally and electorally and legislatively having a revolutionary process that way, because essentially what we're talking about is needing to overturn the basic assumptions, the basic mechanisms of the society in which corporations are able to dictate what goes on, and that there, whether it's the medical establishment, the industrial establishment, you know, you name it, it's basically it was set in the Constitution itself. It was this dynamic was set in motion, the ability of private interests, and it was, you know, it started out with the colonial corporations. You know, basically the United States took over from the colonial corporations, and the need to turn a profit. And the need to turn a profit is basically wired in to our Constitution. And so our ability to actually overturn that is limited at a structural level. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. So I wonder if we can actually, you know, if we can actually get the kind of lives we want through the electoral process and through incremental changes such as Medicare for All, much as I totally support, of course. I mean, if we could do a referendum in Oregon to make it happen, if we could have a new constitutional amendment, if we could elect somebody who would do it, all those are great. But I fear that there's the limiting factor is these basic economic building blocks that establish this country that. And that, you know, getting back to our subject of these protests around the world, there's, you know, some of the protests are trying to put in, you know, to either keep some sort of revolutionary process or to instigate a revolutionary process against, you know, the capitalist neoliberal paradigm. And I'm all in favor of trying to make that happen in the United States. We still don't have anybody calling. 503-231-8187. The reason I brought all that up is because, I was talking about this. I think people should talk about this letter to intellectuals who deride revolutions in the name of purity. And of course, you know, the protests in Bolivia and Chile aren't the only protests. You're talking about Hong Kong. We're talking about, we're talking about Lebanon. We're talking about some countries in Africa. We're talking about, it seems to be a new wave. And I would hesitate to say that, to put a one size fits all on all of these protests, John. I think that you have to study each one independently.
I think so. And I think that all of them, in a sense, have a lot of legitimacy to them. I agree that there are problems, and these protests are for economic problems. The thing is that everything, I think, is also infiltrated. Even the protests here in Portland, they come. People want to protest. They want to have a cause for good things. But at the same time, these are all very much watched and surveilled.
The face of that, what do you do?
Yeah, well, you have to keep alert. I think we have to keep critical. And keep open and be suspicious. I think suspicion is a good thing, and talk about it in that regard. But you talk about voting. I find myself cynical, really, in regards to this whole, all these Democrat debates and all that kind of stuff. I kind of wonder. Sometimes it feels to me like a puppet show. We got Democrats, Republicans are over here doing this, doing that. Get on a side. In the meantime, you know, the wars continue. The climate's burning up. People are dying. I think, how do we get a revolution going at that level, Paul? You got to start it today. I'm going to take this phone call. You tell it.
All right. I certainly don't have any great answers. I feel like in some ways we're taking steps backward. I think, you know, the last period, I mean, certainly Occupy was a moment, a spark. There's been, you know, the anti-globalization movement and the so-called anti-globalization movement of the late 90s that sort of got nipped in the bud by 9/11 was another major moment. And certainly the 1960s was a major moment. Some people say that, you know, our last truly revolutionary moment was actually around the time of World War I that Trotsky was talking about right here in this first article, this letter to intellectuals who derived revolutions in the name of purity. But it looks like we got a caller.
We got Mel on the phone. Mel, are you with us?
Hey, guys. Great show today. I can't get enough of this.
All right.
Anyhow, I have two suggestions. One on this Medicare for All and everything. To put an end to the conversation and get rid of the naysayers is every citizen should be entitled to the same health care plan that Congress has.
There you go.
And the other thing is, as far as this free college, that was come with one stipulation. They have to open up their books and let us see where all their money's going before we give them any more.
All right. Mel, thanks a lot for the call.
You bet. Bye.
All right. Have a good day. This is KBOO. Our phone number is 503-231-8187. You can give us a call and talk about anything you like. You got about 5 minutes left.
Well, I guess I go back to the desire, the need to have, to have people meet and get to know each other on a deep basis and form really close-knit groups, along with things like, you know, the Democratic Socialists of America. I think they've got an interesting thing going. I think they've got a kind of a transparent process, but they've got a lot of working groups, and they've got a truly grassroots democratic voting procedure that I respect. And I think they're moving things. There's a lot of different levels. It can't be, you know, at one level, but you need, you know, more committed people forming tight cadres, tight groups that are able to leverage that power and build upon that. You know, I don't know. What do you think, John?
Yes. I think one of the things that we need to do, really, I think the thing, my own personal opinion, that's what it is I'm with this idea that narrative, whoever, Caitlin Johnstone, I don't know if you've heard of her. She writes a lot from Australia, Johnstone. And I like what she says. And one of the things she says is whoever controls the narrative controls the world. And she's really critical of ideas of the media and its narrative, media being controlled by those who are in power. And we need to be suspicious of narratives and who's feeding them and how they're coming at us. And it doesn't even matter what political party, because they're both both infiltrated with these narratives that continue to establish ultimately the good things for the 1% or the 2% or whatever is in power.
Well, looks like we got one more caller. Maybe we can fit in before the end of the hour. Let's see who that is. John's going to take your call. Oh, that's one's gone. Oh, they're both gone.
Well, that might have been me, actually.
Well, anyway,
maybe they'll call back.
We got about 2 or 3 minutes left. I don't know if anybody can squeeze themselves in, but we're just sort of running by the seats of our pants this morning, talking about a lot of different things, talking about the new wave of protests. Is kind of like since the moment of Occupy and Arab Spring, back in the early 2010s, we seem to be having in the midst of another wave. What direction it's going to go, it's hard to tell. To what extent it's going to take hold in the United States in any significant way. I mean, in some ways, Occupy helped foment a lot of the you know, other things that went that started happening around the world. So this time around, maybe we'll be able to take our inspiration from the rest of the world.
We could. Well, Paul, I think we're about a wrap here. It's 8:56, and I think that's our show for this morning. This is KBOO. That was my last live radio broadcast from November 21st, 2019 with Paul Roland at KBOO. I have my studio set up here at home, not focusing on that too much right now. Right now I'm using my severance for a sabbatical. Just in my PJs reading. Don't know what's going to be next. Thanks for checking in on me at progressivespirit.net. I'm John Shuck. Be well.